And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. Today we're talking with the Kodiak History Museum. The museum is located near downtown Kodiak City. It's housed in a building built over 200 years ago that survived not only a volcanic eruption in 1912, 1964 earthquake and tsunami, but you know, despite the age of the building, the Kodiak Historical Society, which oversees the operations of the Kodiak History Museum, continues to develop new programming, new exhibits for Kodiak residents and for tourists. Except for today, the museum is closed. So sorry to the cruise ship tourists today. But that means I'm even more grateful that we have representatives from the Kodiak History Museum to help us talk about the past, present, and future of the museum. So joining me in the studio is, are Sarah Harrington, the executive director, Lynn Walker, museum curator, and Candace Branson, who serves on the exhibit committee and a board member of the Kodiak Historical Society. So welcome.
Jamai, thanks for having us.
There we go. So we have a lot to talk about. So we're going to kind of split up the show into two segments. First, we'll be talking with Sarah about the building, and then with Lynn and Candace about current programming and some of the really cool, exciting things coming up this month, and on it into the summer. Let's just start off by talking about the building. I mentioned at the top of the show the building itself, but it's gone by about 10 different names over the centuries. Russian American Company, Russian American Magazine, Russian Magazine, Baranov Museum with a V and also with an F, Erskine House, the Storehouse, Alaska's oldest building. I asked this last time when Lynn and Myra were on, what does the staff call the museum building?
I think we call it the museum.
Just the museum.
Sometimes the magazine.
Is the name of the building important?
Yes and no. You know, I think there are so many names. You might walk up to the building and see that it also says Erskine House is another one that's commonly used. And so the different registers, you know, that it's a National Historic Landmark building, which is the top of the top in terms of historic significance identified by the federal government. And then each of the registers beneath, you know, it just depends on what it was used for at that time and what was kind of seen as the priority for achieving said recognition in the way that it was identified as. And, you know, I think that kind of in recognition of all of these names, like you're saying, is why the board chose to move it to the Kodiak History Museum. Just keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Yeah. Right. Okay, well let's dig into the building. Just talk about the importance of the building itself.
Sure. Well, I always say, you know, it's the heart of Kodiak, and we use that language a lot in the different projects that we take on. It really is the epicenter of the community of the city of Kodiak. It is the oldest building in Alaska. We say that it was built in 1808, although there is some documentation showing it was up prior to that. And then, you know, there was no community here really in the sense that we're familiar with. Our entire town grew out from that spot, overlooking the channel. You know, it was a great spot for tall ships to come in, and it was protected from the weather. So, you know, it really is interesting. You know, we think too about Nellie Erskine going out and welcoming newcomers to the community. So, you know, in many senses, both the physical location and also kind of the emotional heart of the community, it really all comes from there to us. But as the oldest building in Alaska, we have a lot going on, as I'm sure you can imagine. And we are really thankful for our partnership with the city of Kodiak, who is working with us, you know, hand in hand, elbow in elbow, rolling up our sleeves to make sure that building will last, you know, another 200 years, hopefully. And so we have some kind of significant projects that we've identified in a historic structure report, which was created in partnership with the National Park Service. It's about a 260-some-page document that outlines evolving use and priorities for rehabilitation of the building. So we've got a lot to do, but we have a lot of support, mm-hmm. and it's going to be wonderful. And just like that, building has lived a very adventurous/glamorous life this whole time. We kind of see that future moving forward as well.
Let's talk about the report a little bit more. That's you commissioned it last year, and yes, it's over 200 pages. I skimmed it. What were some of the recommendations that came out of that report?
Everything. It needs a new roof. It needs a foundation. It needs new electrical. It needs new plumbing. We really want to prioritize making the building more accessible. Of course, it's not up to ADA standards if you've been up those stairs or through the front door. So there's a lot of room for improvement. But we also like to point out to visitors who come down to the museum that, you know, all of this charm is why it's lasted for so long, too. And so the logs that make up the building, I hope everyone's seen it. If you haven't, please come down. We would love to show you. But because those were repurposed from other places, not specifically in that spot, they were taken apart from a building elsewhere and moved to that location. I think that's why the building lasted as long as it has. And so we have a lot of priorities, you know, and right now we're working on a roof design. And so we're looking to kind of make some structural improvements to the roof. We're going to add new, historically appropriate cedar shingles to the roof. You can see there's some moss growing up there that needs to be dealt with. We're also going to return the flat porch area. So there's a covered porch in front that is kind of like that mid-century flat that does not work well in Kodiak at all.
Right.
It really affected our use of that space in the building because it consistently leaks. In fact, the last time that happened, the staff took a video and it literally looked like it was raining inside that room. It was coming from everywhere. And so we're going to put a slight pitch on that porch roof again, which is within the period of historic significance. And so if you look at images of the building, you know, around Nova Repta, the early 20th century, you'll see that there used to be a slight angle there. And so we're working with partners at the National Park Service, with the newly established Kodiak Historic Preservation Commission. We're really seeking out a lot of professional guidance to make sure that we're, making decisions and informed as we can be to address the need that is there in a semi-urgent but kind of celebratory way at the same time. Mm-hmm. It seems contradictory, but I feel like it's true.
Sure, yeah. How does, other than maintaining the building, and you mentioned accessibility, what are some of your or the board's, I guess Candace can chime in too, dream projects for the building?
All right. Dream project. So one of the kind of phrases that we've used a lot in the last 5 years is that the building is the crown jewel of the collection, really, right? I mean, that's why the museum is there. But the needs of the building and the needs of the collection within the building directly compete with one another. So we can't take care of either adequately while the collection is inside the historic building. And so, you know, if we're reaching high here, Jared, you said dream, it would be to have all of our collections housed outside of the National Historic Landmark building. And that's within our strategic plan. I need a lot more coffee to get to that.
Yeah, that sounds like quite a feat.
Yeah. We're working in partnership with the Jülich Museum, and, you know, they have their renovation project going. They are in the kind of capital campaign phase. They're moving along quickly, and we, you know, have high hopes that our partnership will create some space in their renovated area as well. And so they're going to help us to, kind of get through that. And we're hoping to increase access to the collection by having kind of a centralized point for both collections in that building at the same time too. So we're creative, and we know that we'll get there in the long run. We will have a lot to talk about over many years of Talk of the Rocks, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the information within that report itself. Yeah, there's quite a bit to do. I'm impressed that the report was so thorough. I don't think I've seen a building report as thorough for just one building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've really leaned into our partnership with the city and our partnership with the National Park Service, you know, both who are really meaningfully committed to seeing this building just be loved in every way. And so we're really grateful to Grant Crosby up at the Anchorage NPS building up there. He's a senior historic architect, and he serves on the Historic Commission here as well. But, you know, working in partnership with them means that we can, you know, leverage funding sources and, you know, pool all of our, you know, minds and finances together in order to kind of achieve some of these needs, like developing the HSR, which is now the driving force behind all of these upcoming projects. And so, like I mentioned before, we're getting the roof design. The roof we're hoping will be in a construction phase next summer for the roof. And then we will move swiftly through those list of urgent priorities that are outlined in the HSR.
So some big projects coming down the pike. How can the public support these efforts? Will you be going into some capital campaigns?
I've already been through a couple capital campaigns, so I'm fairly reluctant to talk about more capital campaigns.
Yeah.
I have one. I've committed to the Aleutic Museum's capital campaign, so we're going to focus on that one for now. So, you know, I think that there is opportunity to support the Aleutic Museum's renovation project, knowing that it will support the collection at the Kodiak History Museum as well. And then the other thing that I really just like to kind of celebrate is that the more engagement we have with a community, the more we invite people down, the more, you know, a sense of team and togetherness that we have on any project that we take on. And so whether you just come down to, you know, see the new exhibit, to become a member, or to make a contribution in support of building rehabilitation, it is all very significant, no matter what dollar amount it is. Just knowing that we're in this together helps kind of provide ballast for us as a small team working to preserve the oldest building in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Any final comments on the building or, you know, anything that has to do with your role with the museum before we move on to our next segment?
No, I think the only other would be an invitation. If anyone wants to learn more, you'd be welcome to join us at the Kodiak Historic Preservation Commission meetings coming up. We have one coming up in May or June. I know the commission is still choosing dates. We're planning on sharing some information with City Council again soon. So you can kind of keep an eye on what we're doing in partnership with the city as well. But no, thanks for having me and sharing this time. We're excited to talk about the exhibit too.
Sure. Yeah, let's move on to the exhibit, to the Native Identity exhibit. It's been about like 5 or 6 months since you were last on. So kind of refresh everybody what was the purpose of that exhibit and how it came about?
Yeah, do you want to take that,
Candace? Yeah. So Lynn and the Kodiak History Museum put out a request for exhibit proposals, and my friends and I had been talking about this article that we read in the First Alaskans magazine by Delaney Thiel about her experience of Indigenous identity and how conflicted she was in her own identity because of all these intersections of, you know, belonging to a tribe or not, belonging to a Native corporation, and whether you have shares or you're a descendant of that corporation, and whether you speak your language or harvest salmon or not, and whether you look Native or you're blonde hair, blue eyes. And all of these things impact how we see ourselves and how other people perceive us as Native people. And it all affects how we interact with one another. And so when my friends and I were talking about this, I said this should be in a museum. Like this is a current topic of our experience, and we should have a platform to talk about it. Not just us in a friend group, because we don't do that enough, but also as a community. Like, who decides who is Native? How do you become confident in saying that if you don't look Native, or you aren't a subsistence hunter, or you don't speak your language, or you're not very connected maybe to your Native family, or maybe all of those things, and you're still a Native person, but there are all these factors like challenging that conception of your identity. So I brought that to the proposal process. Do you want to talk about the proposal process and like the museum's
So that was our first so we had our first kind of round of community proposals for temporary exhibits last year, and we received Candace's proposal and a few others, and we went through kind of a staff evaluation of the topics. And so what we're trying to do and what we're working toward is to take away curatorial control of our exhibits. And so taking the control away from one person who traditionally does it in a museum, and having, you know, exhibits that that person wants and, you know, might not be relevant to the community. And so this is kind of our first steps to the process of really having exhibits come from the community and developed by the community, using our museum as a platform and a facilitator for that experience and that discussion. And so we had our staff evaluation. We're working up towards more having a community evaluation. We're working towards that. And we saw Candace's proposal and we're like, yes, that needs to be talked about. And, you know, we were very happy to provide the platform for what they wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. So we did.
So it's a pretty, you know, complex and in some ways controversial issue to address in an exhibit. How did the museum staff and the exhibit committee kind of, you know, navigate the political and personal controversies over Native identity? You know, blood quantum, stereotypes, federal definitions versus tribal definitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. So I think that the museum staff did a really good job of listening to our committee. Our committee showed up and talked about all these issues in a pretty vulnerable way. And we had to unpack some of the challenging things together, because they're not discussions we're having at home or in our friend groups very much. So we had to talk about, you know, our members of our family who cannot hunt sea otter because they don't have the blood quantum, mm-hmm. and how they are still a Native person. And the other parts from outsiders, or from people who are telling us who is Native, that affect how we operate as Native people. We first had to kind of unpack those and then talk about how we were going to tell that story. And one of the ways that we tried to deal with that was that we decided to stick to historical facts. Mm-hmm. So we presented many laws that came into place in the United States that impacted how Native people were controlled, how people were criminalized, and how Native people were defined, so that it told the story from that factual historical timeline, and we had historical records to back that up. And then we know that that's not, that may not be the most interesting thing, right? Like, storytelling is so much more interesting. And so we also tried to bring in pictures and stories of our own families that relate to the different laws and events happening in the world, to try to bring our own experiences in and give an example.
Mm-hmm. So when somebody goes into the museum and they look at the exhibit, what are they going to be looking at? Pictures?
Yeah, so they will be looking at, you know, you walk into the exhibit and you see kind of our introductory panel that introduces the topic. And then there's a panel to the other side of that one that, you know, has a breakdown of different colors and different categories. And so, you know, part of what, when we were putting this exhibit together, we realized that it was a lot of information being thrown at people. And so we kind of broke it down into, you know, if a person only has 5 minutes to look at the exhibit, they should really pay attention to the dark blue panels, because that has like the overall narrative of the exhibit. If they want to know more about the laws, they can look at the kind of maroony, magenta-y color. and that has all the laws from, you know, the Marshall Trilogy, from the Supreme Court to Alaska state laws today that were just enacted and stuff like that. And so we really kind of broke that down. And so you'll see, you know, panels, you'll see a lot of information. We have a discussion. We have a subset of panels that talks about, you know, terms that have been used to refer to Indigenous people and where that term came from. Whether it's accepted today or not, and all of that. And then you'll see, you know, family photos from people. You'll see an example of, you know, a certificate of degree of Indian blood and a conversation about how Native people in the United States are the only people that have to have a card to access all of their rights. Mm-hmm. And so talking about that. And then you'll also see some art. We have some artwork by Hannah Scholl that is up there as well. So you'll see a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've gone through my own genealogical process over the past couple of years, and I'm looking at, you know, the Dawes roll from 100 years ago and finding my great-grandfather's name on there in the Creek Indian section. And it's... And then it's like, okay, I find that information, but, you know, I'm two generations removed, right? What does that mean for me? Mm-hmm. You know, and then again, what are the political and personal things about what that means? Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that a project like this has kind of made its way from conversations that aren't happening to now a big public conversation. We have a few more minutes to talk about, I think, some of the other things that you have going on that are somewhat related. I just mentioned genealogy. There's a genealogy project coming up this month. Is this connected to the Native Identities exhibit? Okay.
When we were putting together the exhibit, we realized that we can't put everything into one small room in the museum and expect people to still enjoy their experience. And so we've developed a series of different programs to help support that. And so you mentioned genealogy, and so we talk a little bit about census records in the exhibit. But now I'm working with the Kodiak Public Library and the St. Hermann's Seminary Archives to put together a kind of like a genealogical how-to of, you know, we get questions all the time that from people who are wanting to know more about their family history, and we're like, okay, you have to go to the archives for this, or you have to go, the library has these resources. And so what we're doing with this upcoming event on May 18th is we are all coming together, all the different organizations, and really kind of, you know, showing the different resources that we have, what each organization can offer, help, tips and tricks. There's some, you know, databases out there and, you know, stuff with the museums that are very kind of idiosyncrasies that you have to learn. So we're doing that on May 18th. We have an ongoing family photo drive. And so, you know, we have family photos that were submitted to us before the exhibit went up. But we want to, you know, really build representation inside the gallery and in our museum and really celebrate our community. And so we're asking people to bring in family photos. There is a little scanning station that they scan. They can scan their photo. It will go up digitally in the exhibit for the rest of the time, so people can see people's family photos. And also, with every photo, people get free admission. So.
And then is the and then there's a storytelling workshop this week in just a few days.
Yes. So we have a storytelling workshop happening on Saturday. I don't know why I said Tuesday. on Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon at our museum. It's free, open to the public. And it's with Sperry Ash facilitating. And so really that is looking at how, you know, we talk about identity and we talk about the laws. But we wanted to really pursue, like, you know, this idea of family history and identity and stuff can be communicated through stories and songs and passed down through generations through stories. And so we have Sperry, who's going to be kind of walking us through how to tell stories and really wanting to focus on this idea of when someone became aware. So someone's first memories and really trying to teach how to think about that first memory and how it really impacts you as a person later on with your identity. And so it's related. It's a, just a different different facet of this conversation that we couldn't really pursue in the physical exhibit.
And how exciting. Sperry is such a good presenter, culture bearer. He might sing you a song.
Yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah.
And in our final minute, I also want to give you an opportunity to plug the summer curators.
Yes. So we have a kind of summer camp that's happening in June. There's 2 weeks. And so the first week is for third through fifth grade. And then the second week is for sixth through eighth graders. And it's all week, Wednesday through Saturday, all day. And it's really, you know, a time where we have activities for children to learn about, you know, Kodiak's history and really how the history impacts people today, and looking at the idea of, you know, what is happening today is tomorrow's history. Mm-hmm. And so our theme is Future Historians Club. So the idea that they're learning about history, looking forward. But, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to my guests, Sarah Harrington, Lynn Walker, and Candace Branson. Thanks so much for taking time out of your non-work day, I guess, for you too. and talking about the museum and the Native Identities exhibit. It's thanks for all the good work that you're doing.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, yeah.
And thanks for listening to Talk of the Rock.